Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, this is Ant in the edit, in the future, I guess, from the point of view of when we recorded this. The eagle-eyed amongst you, or the eagle-eared, I guess, would realize that we were supposed to have done 1977, but you're getting 1686. And this is because there's a bit of technical difficulties in the recording of 1977. We won't point any fingers of blame at anyone in particular. We'll never know who was the source of it. So, you know, please stop blaming me, Will and Anna. But it was my fault. Anyway, suffice to say, we'll be back to 1977 next week. So enjoy the sort of like, temporal paradox that we're sort of creating. Okay, bye.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Will, and I'm here with my two friends, Ant and Anna.
Hello!
Hi!
This week we are talking about the year 1686. Now please, may I have your three-word previews? Anna, please go first.
Yes, my three words are inside chief's belly.
Inside chief's belly.
Yeah.
Good. Mine is rulers anti-France fiesta.
Rulers anti-France fiesta.
Is rulers possessive?
Rulers is plural possessive.
Oh, the rulers is anti-France
rulers is,
fiesta.
Oh, anti-France
More
fiesta.
Than one ruler is going on an anti-France fiesta.
Fiesta.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Yes.
Great.
And mine are free-thinking Swede.
Free-thinking Swede.
I'm going to go ahead and call foul on free thinking being two words.
Free thinking is one word.
Hyphenated at best.
Free thinking Swede good.
When in doubt, add a good.
Free thinking Swede queen.
Ooh.
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
good.
Free thinking lady Swede.
Okay, this week I'm going to talk about Christina, Queen of Sweden.
Amazing.
Who is the Swedish queen, best remembered as one of the most learned women of the 17th century.
Wow.
That's pretty low bar to cross.
I know, I was going to say, that's so impressive. Yeah. And I was like, there were probably like five of them.
Yeah.
So,
she was fond of books and paintings and sculpture, and she was interested in religion and philosophy and mathematics. And she attracted many scientists to Stockholm, where she tried to make the city into a kind of Athens of the north, like the center of learning. And then later on, during the Peace of Westphalia, that allowed her to establish academies and universities wherever she wanted across Europe. So these are the sorts of things that she's remembered for today. And I will talk a little bit about her life.
Academies, you said?
Academies.
I thought you said cannabis. And I was like, oh, okay, Christina.
I mean, maybe that as well.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, she was also obsessed with alchemy, which is a less worththwhile enterprise.
Yeah, well, swinging a mess.
Cool. So let's talk a bit about her life. So she was born in 1626 and was a member of the House of Vasa. And she was Queen of Sweden. from 1632 until her abdication in 1654.
Have you guys been to the Vasa Museum in Stockholm?
No,
I have not.
It's actually extremely cool. And that's why I said, oh, because I don't know if it's connected. But it's this ship, this like giant wooden ship that sank kind of immediately upon leaving harbor and was like buried in the mud. And they unearthed it and put it in this museum. And it's excellent.
Wow, okay.
If you're in Stockholm. So I wonder if that's the same Vasa.
Probably is.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll go. We'll make sure we do a kind of
conveniently.
Expense this.
Yeah, yeah. It's also feature. Right next door to the ABBA Museum. So 2 for 1.
So she succeeded her father, which is often the way it goes with royals. And this guy is called Gustavus Adolphus.
Yeah.
And he died in the Battle of Lützen in 1632. But then she only began actually ruling the Swedish Empire when she reached the age of 18, which was 12 years later. 12 years later. So when she was, and when she was born, the baby was first thought to be a boy, as it was, quote, hairy, unquote, with a strong, hoarse voice.
Oh.
Now, I know medicine and stuff was not great at the time, but if the midwife / doctor was saying, yeah, it's a boy, we think, on account of the hair is what's
maybe it was just when they could only see the head, not to get too graphic.
Yeah, okay.
The head and the mouth, because it was screaming.
And the mustache.
And the mustache. It was probably the mustache.
I mean, history doesn't really tell us much more, I'm afraid. But the king was very happy, stating, "She'll be clever. She's made fools of us all." And he was then really close to his daughter. But her mother remained permanently aloof with her, partly because she was disappointed at the child being a girl rather than a boy.
A hairy girl.
Exactly. And she'd had a couple of girls before, so I think she was felt under pressure
That's
to produce
very
a boy.
Unfair.
And it also seemed that her mother suffered with quite poor mental health.
Oh,
and so as a result, she was then like kept apart from the baby as well.
Because
they thought it would kind of should pass it down her bad mental health down onto the baby.
Yeah.
Under the like fairly terrible practices of the time.
Yeah.
And then in June 1630, when Christina was 3 years old, her father then left. The king then left to go to Germany to defend Protestantism during the 30 Years' War. And before he left, he secured his daughter's right to inherit.
And he picked her, even though she had older sisters?
It's a very good point. it's a very good point. Okay.
I hate to be the one to point out the plot hole.
To which history and will have no answer.
Yeah, one of those two things has no answer.
Further research is required. he secured her right to rule in case he never returned and gave orders to his marshal, importantly here about how learned she ended up being, that Christina should receive an education of the type normally only afforded to boys.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It just showed, she was basically just given a normal education. Okay, so I'm not going to tell the whole story of her life, but she's a pretty fascinating, kind of independently minded person who is like intellectually curious, was a patron of the arts and of the sciences, and led a really interesting life. But here are some interesting facts to some of the stuff that she got up to. So in 1644, she began to issue copper in lumps as a currency. And some of these lumps were as big as 15 kilograms.
That's a really inconvenient type of currency. Like, hold on, let me haul out my 15 kilogram lump of copper.
It's oxidizing. It's
the
green
patina. Yeah,
it's getting like my copper bag all dirty.
Oh my god, your hands would just smell like pennies all the time.
I mean, yeah. So I like,
and a lump of it. Not even like,
no, a lump.
She's an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, I have absolutely no idea why she did that, clear. Anyway, that's the thing she did. She also had a habit of total financial extravagance. So, in fact,
spending copper.
All those lumps of copper.
Copper for you, lump for you, and you, and you.
She's just chucking them into the audience.
And her financial extravagance got so bad that it nearly bankrupted the Swedish state.
Wow.
And the financial difficulties from it all caused public unrest. So she didn't do like a first-class governing job, frankly.
Women be shopping.
She also kept a goat and a donkey with her on her travels around Europe. And I'm a big fan of the goat and the donkey.
Advice, obviously.
Yeah.
Of course. Christina also argued for peace to end the 30 Years' War.
Okay.
And she received indemnity from the other side. And then meanwhile, she caused a scandal when she decided not to marry, which is interesting. And she converted to Catholicism secretly in Brussels. And then publicly in Innsbruck later.
After her dad had died defending Protestantism.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of addictive. She clearly had this like, there was a lot going on, I think, with her. So she, I mean...
A lot to unpack, really, isn't
there? There's a lot to unpack.
So what happened?
What's that?
The donkey made her do it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she saw a hot priest or something.
Or that.
No, well, I mean, she was almost certainly gay. Not to like, I think it's really difficult to, you know, try to delve into the private thoughts of historical figures, right? But I think she was probably gay. She's also had her dad, which obviously she couldn't necessarily express openly at the time.
Yeah, right.
Odd choice to go into Catholicism if you are gay.
Well, I think it must. So this is the point. I think she didn't want to marry a man.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that was also linked to the fact that might be removed some expectations on her to marry because into other Protestant aristocrats.
Okay, yeah,
she's
yeah,
Catholic.
Okay, yeah.
That's actually pretty shrewd then. Shrewd,
yeah, yeah. So there's all these sorts of things going on. And then meanwhile, quite right, her dad had died fighting for the other side.
Yeah.
So, I mean, incredibly complex psychology, what's going on here. And then, so due to that, Pope Alexander VII then described Christina as a queen without a realm, a Christian without a faith, and a woman without shame. Which is a brilliant quote, let's face it, but like also
if that
really
was on
horrible.
The back
that's
of a
really
book.
She converted to Catholicism and then he slags her off like that?
Yeah, he didn't like it. Yeah.
And like, is there any like proof of her, like, is there any like sort of, other than just people maybe trying to slander, like how do we know that she's probably, other than that she didn't marry?
Oh, well, so...
That's basically all you could say in the
century. So she had a fairly like unconventional lifestyle by the time. So interestingly, she grew up as a girl destined for power.
Mm.
And she was educated. She was given kind of the surroundings and upbringing she had with that of a boy at the time, basically. She had a quite unconventional lifestyle as an adult, and she had quite a masculine sort of dress sense. Most of the kind of biographies that have been written about her have explored in quite some detail about that she sort of expressed her gender and sexuality very differently than you might expect from a normal aristocratic woman at the time. It's sort of quite an important part, I guess, of her.
It's fascinating.
I still can't believe the Pope did her dirty like that.
I know, it's outrageous.
But great, I'd love someone to speak to me like that.
It's a great quote. It's a great
quote.
The Pope
does not want to classify me in any terms.
Yeah. I'm happy to say you're a man without shame.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going on my LinkedIn profile.
So she ended up being the guest of 5 consecutive popes and became a symbol of the Counter-Reformation.
Yeah.
And is one of the few women buried in the Vatican grotto.
Oh.
Mm.
And then
is that like the Playboy Mansion grotto?
Yes. No, they're different grottos. They're two
different
grottos.
Oh, okay.
Hot tub.
Yeah.
People do frequently end up at one having intended for the other.
Oh, shit. I thought this was the Vatican.
Sat-nav got it wrong.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have had all that Viagra.
Final fact from me, and one of the best. So when Louis XIV revoked the Edict of Nantes, which abolished the rights of the French Protestants, the Huguenots.
I'm about to talk about this as well, so this is exciting for me.
Okay, cool. So this is perfect. So when Louis XIV abolished the rights of French Protestants, Christina then wrote an indignant letter, and by this time she's in Rome, dated on the 2nd of February 1686, which is directed at the French ambassador, arguing against it and imploring them to change the policy. And then in Rome, she made Pope Clement X prohibit the appalling custom of the time of chasing Jews through the streets during carnivals and during these public holidays,
which is
the level of like state-mandated persecution of Jews at the time. And then in
she was against that.
She's arguing in everything she's doing against religious persecution.
Okay, great. Okay. Yeah.
This time she's out of power in Sweden, in Rome, but she's still like it's... incredibly important public figure lobbying for inclusion.
Yeah.
And for,
nice.
An influencer.
Yeah.
She had 100,000 Instagram followers.
Yeah.
And then later on, she issued a declaration saying that the Roman Jews were under her personal protection.
Oh.
Signed Laragina, the queen.
Based on nothing.
Based on nothing, yeah. But it was like an important symbolic thing for
someone.
I love
that.
No one else was saying that sort of thing about the Jewish community as well.
Right.
And she had an aggressive goat.
They're under my protection. also the donkey and the goats.
Yes,
exactly. And so overall, she was this really fascinating figure, very independently minded, and someone who confounded lots of social norms. Yeah, there you have it. It's Queen Christina of
Sweden.
That's
pretty cool.
I like her.
Good job, Lady Swede.
Yeah, good job her. Okay, cool. To follow that up.
Yeah.
Some overlaps in what we're talking about, I guess because it is the same year. But I'm going to talk about France mainly and people that are anti-France.
Oh,
in this anti-France fiesta. Like Will. He might have been there. This is the League of Augsburg.
Nope.
Augsburg.
There it is.
League of Augsburg.
Nope.
Augsburg. Pick one.
The League of Augsburg.
Yeah. There you go.
There we go. So the late 17th century, as we know, time of political intrigue and shifting alliances in Europe. King Louis XIV of France, we just mentioned, sought to expand his territories and consolidate his power, and his ambitions set off this chain reaction of events that would eventually lead to the formation of the League of Augsburg in 1689, the year after in question. So we're dealing with the build-up to this. Don't at me.
Well, 3 years after the year in question, but good enough.
Yeah, whatever. The article... so we're going to explore the lead-up to the formation of the League, and highlighting these different personalities, interesting connections, all that kind of stuff, and these long-lasting consequences of such. So strap in. We're going to talk about King Louis XIV, otherwise known as the Sun King, because I think he was either very dense, very bright, or others revolved around him. Not really sure.
Yeah, no, he was. It's because he was made of mostly helium.
Yes.
Hydrogen, sorry.
Hydrogen, converting to helium, though. Ruled France from 1643 to 1715, a key figure in European history. He was known for his ambitious expansionist policies and his extremely extravagant lifestyle. Under his reign, for example, the Palace of Versailles was built, you know, symbol of power and grandeur. Still lasts today. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
He also wanted to expand his territories. He increasingly came into conflict those that people, you know, didn't want France to expand their territories, which is basically everyone else, particularly the Holy Roman Empire and the Dutch Republic.
Ooh.
Which is, in my mind, very like the Star Wars Republic. but anyway, so what he enacted then was called a series of things called the Reunions.
The Reunions.
The Reunions. So in 1679, the Treaty of Nijmegen. Oh my gosh. Nope. The treaty.
There was a treaty.
There was a treaty. Nijmegen. Nijmegen. Nijmegen.
Nijmegen.
Nijmegen. Now, the Treaty of Nijmegen.
We're so flying blind here.
End of the Franco-Dutch War, resulting in territorial gains for France. However, the Sun King was not satisfied and sought to further expand his influence and territories through a policy known as the Reunions, or in French, Les Réunions.
Brilliant.
The French king claimed that certain territories in the Holy Roman Empire were rightfully part of France, and he set up what were called the Chambers of Reunion, or Chambre de la Réunion, to investigate these claims.
God, I feel like I'm there.
And so what these were like sort of nominally independent bodies that were ascertaining the legality of who owns what, where and when, but they were just French puppets,
yeah,
effectively. They weren't literally, they might have been.
Or in puppets. French, les puppets.
Les puppets. So the policy alarmed neighbouring states who saw these actions as a threat to their own territories and the balance of the power infrastructure within Europe. And so in October 1685, Louis XIV revoked the Edict of Nantes, which granted religious freedom and civil rights to French Protestants known as Huguenots. So this is gone, so the Huguenots. So the Edict of Fontainebleau, which officially revoked this edict, led to the... What? Led to the persecution of the Huguenots.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
This is the thing I just talked about.
Yes, yeah. It's exactly this thing.
Yeah.
And the destruction of their churches and schools. And so these Huguenots fled France, seeking refuge in neighboring countries, and contributed to the tensions between France and other European powers. And this diaspora helped to spread anti-French sentiment. So you now had people that were sort of nervous about the French expansion, flooded with people that had influence and power.
They were like the French Protestants got dispersed.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, cool.
And so in 1686...
But that was like, I mean, people sort of brush over that, but that was like as... One of the worst religious persecutions ever seen.
Oh,
like
yeah.
900,000 of them or something. And they're all like,
yeah.
Appalling.
Really awful. And in 1686, he incorporated various territories into France, such as the Principality of Orange, located in modern-day southern France.
Orange.
Orange.
Principality.
And part of the Alsace region into the French realm. And this really ticked off the alarmed European powers and contributed to this escalating tensions. And so, out of this, these embers formed this unlikely alliance of countries.
The Justice League.
The Justice League. So the tensions rose, and this unlikely alliance began to form against Louis XIV. The Dutch Republic, led by the shrewd statesman William III of Orange, who would later become King William III of England, sought to counter the growing French threat. William III worked tirelessly to forge these alliances with other European powers, including Spain, the Holy Roman Empire, and Sweden. And this diplomatic effort laid the groundwork for the formation of the League of Augsburg, which was then signed in 1687, so all this beat up into that, between the Holy Roman Empire of Spain, the Dutch Republic, Sweden, England, the Duchy of Savoy, and a lot of smaller German states.
It's literally everyone else in Europe except France.
It was also later called the Grand Alliance.
Yeah. As
well. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So this is like all these people that were vying for power and status and, you know, at each other's throats, and suddenly they had this united front against the French.
It's like the enemy of my enemy of my enemy of my enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly. A whole cast of characters. So I'm just going to hit some of the names here so you just know
Great.
Them.
Great. Strap in.
There we go.
Roman Empire, Emperor Leopold I.
Oh, that's an easy one.
Spain, King Charles II. The Dutch Republic, Stadtholder William III of Orange. Sweden, King Charles XI. England and Scotland, first of all, was King James II, and then replaced by William III after the Glorious Revolution in 1688, and Savoy, the Duke Victor Amadeus II.
All right.
So a whole bunch of people. And this is like in the height of this Baroque period. So this is the absolute peak of like just extravagant balls.
Like white stockings and, buckled high heel shoes,
powdered faces and wigs, fake
crystal everywhere.
The crystal, the champagne. Yeah, good. Yeah.
And so
right.
The club promoters were so really prevalent good. in the 1680s.
They're all just like jamming out to Bach.
Yeah.
And so this is where all the tropes of like all these tropes come from this time. This actually was like this. And King Charles II of Spain was renowned for his love of these festivities, hunting, good times. And he threw these extravagant parties that would last for days, and attendees dressing up in elaborate costumes. And it was just this den of gossip and intrigue and spies and rumor mongering and all kinds of stuff.
Love it.
It's exactly that. And they're like, ooh, hear what the French are doing? Ooh, what about this? Why don't we partner? No, we possibly can't do that. All this back and forth. It's great stuff. I would have done great there.
I'd be you do so look good in a powdered wig.
I would really, really good. So the events leading up to the formation of the League of Augsburg, just it really sort of set this stage then, because you had France on one side and you had basically everyone else. And that set the stage for the 9 years war that started later on in 1688, which was this major conflict between France and this coalition. And there's numerous battles and sieges and campaigns across Europe, just threw the whole thing into warfare. And there's a treaty later on, the Treaty of Ryswick. And the League of Augsburg was a precursor to the Grand Alliance, which would again go on to later oppose France during the War of the Spanish Succession in 1701. So it really set this tone for just like decades of warfare and just destruction and heartache and pain, all because the Sun King wanted more land back into France. So to sum it all up, the lead up to the formation of the League of Augsburg was just political intrigue, power plays, a lot of notable personalities all vying for space on the European stage. King Louis XIV seeking to expand, lay this foundation for this just rifts in Europe that, you know, carry on to this day, one could argue, you know, with Will here.
Will is a one-man League of Augsburg.
But it really did, like, you know, all joking aside, has laid the foundation for European sort of like identity. Is still along some of these same allegiance and lines.
Yeah, I mean, Ireland, right? It's like, I mean, so many of the origins of the problems there come from the 30 Years' War and the Orange, William of Orange
is not the most popular of characters.
In some parts of the islands of Ireland.
Yes, yeah.
How many more caveats
popular
can we
in
put?
Other parts?
Yeah.
Yes, and very popular in other parts. Yeah, there is a divide.
There is a,
which we're going to solve today.
Yeah.
Cool. That's my story about Europe, France, and anti-France.
Nice.
Nice.
It's funny to remember just how much of like the 17th century was war.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing.
I wouldn't
say
funny.
funny peculiar. Funny. Well, great. I am far away from Europe today. I've gone down to Africa, where I haven't been in a while. And I'm talking about the kingdom of Dahomey, okay. Which existed from around 1600 until 1904 in what is now Benin.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is very cool. They've been on my list to talk about, and I was just waiting for a year when something close to important happened, close to the year in question. And ding, 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 got it. So I want to talk a little bit about the origins of Dahomey. There's a popular but probably false account of how the kingdom got that name. The story goes that a man named Dakodonu, who was probably the second king, was granted permission by the local rulers to settle in this plateau and kind of establish himself there. Dakodonu requested additional land from a prominent chief named Dan or Da, to which the chief responded sarcastically, "Oh, should I open up my belly and build you a house in it?" Dakodonu was very insulted by this, so he killed Dan on the spot.
Did he then build a...
Well, he did begin the construction of his palace, allegedly right in the spot where he'd killed this guy.
Wow.
And so the name of the kingdom, Dahomey, was derived from this incident. Dan meaning chief, Ho meaning belly, and May meaning inside of.
Oh.
So that was my three words, inside chief's belly.
Nice.
Yeah. Possibly apocryphal, but...
What does ho mean again?
Ho, belly.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was what that meant, but okay.
Well, in this language that you speak.
Where my belly's at.
Yeah. Nice. So anyway, that all happened in the early 1600s, maybe. But Dahomey's foundational king is usually considered to be a man named Wegbaja. And the oral tradition around Wegbaja is that he was the son of this king, King Dakodonu. And King Dakodonu was betrothed to a woman, but Wegbaja got that woman pregnant. So Dakodonu disowned him, which is not great.
Mm.
But then Wegbaja killed a very strong rival of the king, so they reconciled, and Wegbaja becomes the heir to the kingdom again, which, as far as sleeping with your father's fiancé goes, is about the best result you can hope for.
Still a pretty awkward Thanksgiving.
It's not great, yeah. It's probably a little bit of tension for a while.
Yeah.
But anyway, King Dakodonu dies in around 1645, and Wegbaja becomes the king. And he formed much of the administrative and religious practices of the kingdom. He kind of sets the scene for how it will grow and evolve from there. He built the royal palace. He loved taxes. He introduced poll taxes and death taxes.
Death taxes?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like inheritance tax.
I think inheritance
tax. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah,
no,
not like you have to pay a tax in order to die.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
And
I just wouldn't pay. Live forever.
Loophole.
What other taxes did he introduce? And VAT?
He loved VAT. He began raiding and taking over towns outside of the plateau, and he's the first king to really think about expanding the territory and growing the kingdom. One thing that he may or may not have done, these people I'm about to talk about definitely did exist, but it's a little unclear who really founded this institution. but it may have been Wegbaja. And that was the creation of the Dahomey Amazons, the Agogye. So these are the elite all-women army of the Dahomey who would later be the inspiration for like the Dora Milaje from Black Panther, among other things. But they were very real. They were called Amazons by Europeans who later saw them and obviously likened them to the Greek myth. But internally, they were called the Agogye or the Mino, which means our mothers.
Yeah.
And they're
I don't think my mother would be good at that, I think.
Well, how good is your mom with a musket?
Well, she's all right. Good. Yeah, she's not bad. Yeah,
she could have done it then.
Yeah, fair one. Okay.
But if she had, you wouldn't exist because they were prohibited from being married or having children.
Oh, well.
So I wish she had done it.
Oh, my God.
She could do it now.
She could do it now. She could do it.
Well, I don't know, actually. I don't know if you can retroactively once you've had a child.
Maybe she'd have to kill me first.
Yeah. Oh, that's an intriguing thought.
I don't think so. Please stop being intrigued by this, by my demise.
I'm just going to call your mom real quick. So in Dahomey culture, all official roles from financial advisors to religious leaders to the military generals were balanced by both a male and a female leader.
Oh.
And the king would bestow the title of woman king on a female reign mate. So you may have heard of the movie with Viola Davis.
Yeah.
Viola Davis, my woman king. I had to say that. I guarantee three people listening.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
It's great. I'll explain it later. But so there's this tradition of strong female leadership, and that's maybe why this army was created. But it's also possible that it was for a much more practical reason, which is that the kingdom was losing many men in battles with neighboring West African states as they tried to expand the territory. So they turned to the women, who ended up being totally badass. Another possible origin is that Dahomey had this tradition of skilled women who would hunt in teams. And then they became part of the palace guard. And then that soon evolved into this army. I did mention that they weren't allowed to marry or have children. And if anyone even touched them, that person would be killed.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just a life I'm currently leading, but not by choice.
I mean, that just makes all the more interesting.
Yeah. The danger.
The danger.
The danger is real. And then by the mid-19th century, the Agogye were made up of different regiments of women, all with their own uniforms, everything commanded by women. There were rifle women, huntresses, archers, reapers, and gunners.
Reaper?
Yeah.
What's a it's reaper?
Pretty badass,
that's
right?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What are they armed with?
Unless they're like the ones out there reaping the fields of like hay. Yeah, like, they're the farmers.
I don't know. Maybe they had like scythes.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That's so cool.
Also, when you said they had all the different uniforms, that means that there's not a uniform then, really.
No, sorry. All the regiments had their own.
Okay. So like, each regiment had their own one rather than like.
No, they just got to wear whatever they want.
Every day was casual Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
At army.
You know what? Show up. It's fine. Whatever you got on, I'll do. So just to circle back to the founding of the Agogye, it could have been under Wegbaja, but it could have been his daughter. So Wegbaja had twins, a son named Akaba, who succeeded him in 1685, and a daughter named Hangbei. And there's a theory that after Akaba ruled and died, Hangbei took over as queen outright, or at least as regent, either for 3 months or 3 years. It's a little unclear. And unfortunately, she was ultimately written out of the official record of kings, which sucks. But she still has descendants living in Benin today, which I think is pretty cool. Anyway, Wegbaja dies in 1685, which is conveniently just 1 year away from the year in question. But I wanted to talk a little bit more just in this last minute or two about Dahomey in general, in case we never get to them again. After Wegbaja's death, the kingdom continues on. But by the 1740s, Dahomey is heavily involved in the slave trade. As they expanded and claimed territory, the slave trade provided the largest part of the king's income. They'd sell their captives as slaves, often with some pretty staggering brutality. And that continues for about a century. But in the 1840s, the British have decided that it's time to end the slave trade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep, go on.
Or at least, you know, parts of them.
Or sorry, end the slave trade for others.
Yeah.
Yeah. I yeah. see. Because
exactly.
Want
to monopolize. So they blockade, the British blockade the ports of Dahomey in 1851.
No, hang on. To be fair here, this is the Brits genuinely trying to end the slave
yeah,
trade.
Yeah, okay. That's true.
Like globally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
They did try to end it and then continued in places like America
yeah, exactly.
for, you know, many more years.
Okay.
So yeah, the British blockaded the ports in 1851 and Dahomey stopped trading for a bit, but then resumed in 1857 for a lot of reasons, namely because it was a key source of power and wealth and one of their key levers over their rivals, the Oyo. But they had actually really interestingly fractured internally around the slave trade. And by the 1840s, there were two parties in the country, one of which included the crown, the male military personnel, and the traders, who were obviously in favor of continuing the trade. And the other included the Agogie, the women warriors, as well as priests and other officials who wanted to legitimize the trade and do trade things like palm oil instead of humans. So at least there was that. Unfortunately, then we enter squarely into the era of colonialism. France comes knocking for Dahomey. France and Dahomey fight a series of wars in the late 19th century, which France eventually wins, and Dahomey becomes a colony, a French colony, in 1894. And once they were in charge, the French not only banned the Agogie, but also basically prevented women from being in public service, getting an education, and all that good stuff. So in what is turning out to be quite an anti-French episode.
Yeah, we should probably like sprinkle in some good things about France. France is great. Now, it's good.
Now,
pretty
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, good. And then...
Good effort.
Just, I want to give a fair imbalance, you know.
So Dahomey gained independence in 1960 and then changed its name to Benin in 1975. Mm. And one cool final fact is that Nawi, the last known surviving Agogie with battlefield experience, died in 1979.
Oh, right, okay.
When she was more than 100 years old. And so it's just kind of cool to think about, you know, this amazing female warrior who really saw some shit and died.
Could have worked at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Could have worked at JPL. Absolutely. I think she probably did. That's not written down in history, but I bet she did. So anyway, that's just a little about the Kingdom of Dahomey and what is now Benin. And they're very, very cool women warriors.
That's so cool.
That's yeah. pretty cool.
And now we should watch either Black Panther or
You know, I've
Woman
never seen
King.
It.
Have you not seen Black Panther?
No.
It's actually
it's really
excellent.
Good.
Oh, right.
I mean, like, yeah. we genuinely could, like, watch a movie together at some stage.
I know, we do. We do.
I'm aware. I know.
We
I
do
know.
Mention it every
yeah,
episode.
Yeah, we could, like, you just insist on never hanging out with me unless there's some sort of business venture outcome to
yeah.
this, like, podcast.
Yeah, what people don't know
whether
is
it's
that...
me crushing grapes for the vineyard. I'm in the mines searching for that lost gold from
I'm
last
so
episode.
I'm so tired of your full
You know, one. I am just constantly under the yoke of the labor here. And I just feel that we should like hang out in some sort of other guys rather than exploiting my
I just consider you a productive asset.
The fact that you consider me productive is
yeah, that's
genuinely
a
endearing to
that's
me.
That's a stretch, Will.
It's one of the nicest things anyone has ever said to me.
Well, you need haranguing, but you're...
when I'm lazy, I'm just looking for attention. You know?
Hence the podcast.
So that's everything you'd ever need to know about the year 1686.
Yes, indeed. And in case you were wondering, we have gone bi-weekly. That's mm-hmm. why there wasn't an episode last week, but just wanted to remind you all that's going to be the schedule for the foreseeable future.
And if you want more content, do check out the Patreon.
Yep.
patreon.com/randomlyhistory.
Also, just email us in. Tell your friends. Email us that you told your friends. Tell your friends to email us. I like emails. I want emails.
If you could, in your email, send just one word at a time so we get like 200 emails, that would be
great.
Really
and
it, fun.
The email address, which might be helpful to read out, is randomlygeneratedhistory@gmail.com. Do email us in.
Randomlygeneratedhistory@gmail.com. Is that too long? Do you think we should get a shorter one?
You can
I think we're committed.
You oh, can yeah, email me personally at iamafartnugget@gmail.com. That is a real email address that I own. So I would love to hear you hear from you there as well. And that means the only thing that's left to do is get our next year.
Yeah. Okay, so I am continuing.
Oh, your apprenticeship.
My apprenticeship. Sorry, I need to don my robes.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, good. They're donned. The candles are lit. I am shuffling towards the altar.
The incense in here. Yeah, it's thick ponging, with...
yeah. It's a year's worth of incense burning.
A year's worth of the production of Arabia.
I'm genuflecting. It's quite like the coronation in many ways, although more extravagant.
And your fingers are far fatter.
Penny Mordaunt has got the sword held aloft.
Yeah, Penny, that was.
Hi, Penny, thank you so much for bringing the sword.
Thank you, Penny. And yes, I am now cranking it. And it.
Oh my God.
Sorry, that's me doing the dance move, cranking it. Not cranking the random number generator. That, it doesn't have a crank. That's silly. And the year, just to remind you, is going to be between 1000 BCE and 2000 CE. And the year is 777.
Ah.
What I've always said about you is you're just slightly off of the mark of the beast.
777.
777.
Great. That is going to be...
a lucky year.
It's very specific, that year.
It's very specific.
A very specific year in
it
the
It is a very specific year. Correct.
Yeah. I have a tradition of playing the slots after every episode.
Of course. You go to play the slots.
I do, and I never get the year in question. Oh, so this time I'm in.
Hopefully you'll get this one, and then it's a big win.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm doing well in my apprenticeship? Or?
No, not really.
Okay.
Well. Far too much cranking.
Great. See you next time.
Toodle-pip.
Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.